Welcome to the Evident Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evident Footprints, Don Nikoloff. And if you're hearing us clearly, then we did the right thing, fixing it before starting and trying to work our way through it on a live show. Well, welcome on this June the 18th on the West Coast. It's already June the 19th on the East Coast and points in between. And it's been a crazy day. Some of you may or may not have heard my TNT hour this afternoon at 1 p.m. on BBS Radio, and I dealt with an issue regarding some anomalies between the Tim Russert interviews with Dick Cheney and the 9/11 Commission facts that are definitely in dispute with what Mr. Cheney said some years ago, in fact, 5 days after 9/11, to Tim Russert, who passed away recently. Why was Tim Russert taken out, do you think? Well, some people think that he knew too much. Now, let's just keep rolling, folks. I guess if you didn't get the beginning of the show, we could start this again for the sake of the archives. If you'd like to start it again, by all means, go ahead. I'm going to keep going here. Anyway, Tim Russert passed away of a heart attack on the job in the NBC studios in Washington, D.C. a few days ago. And it was interesting that he has been for the past 3 or 3.5 years under subpoena by a grand jury in relation to the Valerie Plame case, the one that got Scooter Libby in a lot of trouble before George W. Bush pardoned him. That amazing. They can do wrong, they can break laws, commit felonies, and they're pardoned. And then they put them back to work in the back room someplace. Of course, we're not supposed to know that that goes on, but that's exactly what goes on. Now, Tim Russert was investigating some issues regarding the current war and the possibility of a war being instigated with Iran. And that's probably what caused them to push the button on Mr. Russert. They can create heart attacks from space and using psychic means. They got some pretty evil people when they want to use them. And so I find it very interesting that all throughout his career, he got very little notice from mainstream media, but he dies of a heart attack while at work, and he became more famous than Paris Hilton in a matter of hours. So we'll keep our eyes on that. Now, another quick story. Michael Reagan, the son of former President Ronald Reagan, was on the air recently on his radio show, his syndicated radio show, demanding that 9/11 truthers be shot. In fact, he said he would pay for the bullets. Now, if that isn't solicitation to commit murder, I don't know what is. And Mr. Reagan has conveniently left the country. I find that interesting. He singled out Mark Dice. He was somehow able to get YouTube to pull all the videos off of YouTube describing this whole fiasco, we could call it. And when it gets to where talk show hosts from the mainstream media are allowed to issue death threats against anyone after the truth, we have some big problems. We have very huge problems. And we're probably going to talk about that a bit tonight with tonight's guest. She is the host of Mission Possible on BBS Radio on Sundays. And she is also a co-host, a frequent co-host, with Dr. Leonard Horowitz, a good friend of mine, on Tuesday evening's Insight Hour. In fact, Dr. Horowitz comes on right before my Tuesday night show, every Tuesday. And I'm happy to have her as an official guest, a scheduled guest on my show. And with that, let's welcome the Reverend Roxy Hampton. Rev, how are you doing tonight?
I'm absolutely blessed. I am absolutely blessed, Don. I'm happy to be here.
Well, I'm happy to have you here. You got to hear a little bit of my introduction. What did you? What is your take on these current events? I mentioned a couple of scenarios here.
Oh, I find it quite interesting fodder for tonight's show. I can start off with the fact that at the time when I was reading Bob Woodard's Commanders and then moved on to Plan of the Attack, I was reading and I said to myself, oh my goodness, this stuff's going to come up again. And for those people who have read the trilogy, the whole thing about the Valerie Flame, you know, we have to revisit it. We really have to revisit it because there was some strange justice dispensed over this affair, because it went all the way to the top. Because what some people are surmising is that this was a vengeful revenge type of thing that the administration is very well known for. And I believe that the little thing in Bob Woodard's book, Plan of the Attack, and then his larger explanation of this whole affair in State of Denial tells the tale of the tape. You know what I'm saying, Don? It tells
mm-hmm.
the tale of the tape. George Bush was very aware of what he was getting ready to do, because he received the memo on the plane. When one looks at the whole thing in terms of how they treated Louis Libby, they made it look like he was being treated, they were kicking him out. They didn't even, I mean, he had a broken leg at the time when they came to tell him he had to get out of his office. They didn't even give him a minute to get out. But when you look at the game that was played and you look at who he really is, then you get the whole idea of how they could even do this. And when you look at Bob Woodard's book, and you sit there and you say, my goodness, Bob knew who she was. You see what I'm saying? When he was writing his book back in 2004, he had been told that she was a CIA, high up in the CIA, and that she was a very sensitive analyst for weapons of mass destruction. So exactly what these men are doing is covering up, and the whole thing is really delicious, because it goes all the way back to, again, 2001. It goes back to Enron. It goes back to how many times Kenneth Lay and Skittle, or whatever his name was, visited with the vice president, you see, who was the chairman of the Energy Task Force. And then when you look at all the indictments that were coming down and the investigations and the accountings and the whole thing, there were three meetings with Vice President Cheney. What were they talking about? The weather. So I find it all very interesting, Don. It's not over.
Mm-hmm. You know, I talked about this at some length. I did a monologue on the news show, which I usually do occasionally. I'll have a guest, but for the most part, I discuss an issue. And I was picking this thing apart about Cheney's comments to Russert on public TV 5 days after 9/11. And just following the timelines that the Secret Service kept, the timelines that they didn't keep, the statements that were made by Cheney, and then the statements that were made by Cheney to the 9/11 Commission, as if no one was going to go back and listen to these other statements. Okay, we found this virtually in every aspect of anything we've looked at 9/11. It is so obvious that these people's hand and fingerprints are all over every aspect of 9/11. There is no doubt about that in anyone's mind who has looked at this seriously. But more and more and more information is coming out, almost by the minute. And for them to think that we are that stupid, I mean, you know, stupid's got to stop someplace. And, you know, I say it stops with them, not us, with them. It stops there. Now, I did go off on this a little bit on the news today, but I found it interesting that now we can start tying some of this stuff in. The dates tie into Leo Wanta and a memo that Wanta sent to Rice and Cheney about what was going on in the Philippines back in November. You know, they were meeting with terrorists. They met with Datu Ben Abu, who was a lieutenant of Osama bin Laden. And we know that bin Laden, I wrote about this as far back as 1986, bin Laden and Ted Gunderson, who has been on my show, were in the same room together. Ralph Olberg, Michael Reconosciuto. These are all the key players in the weapons industry, the computer industry, computer software, stolen promise software, backdoors into everybody's database. These people were all involved in that. It wasn't just bin Laden. And here we had the bin Laden family. Bin Laden himself was a partner with Bush. They were business partners together. I mean, and you're going to say, well, these are the terrorists. These are the people that you're doing business with. You are the terrorists. That's the reality of it.
Well, this is how it works, doesn't it?
Yeah, exactly. So Tim Russert being taken out, well, he was kind of coming forward with something similar to Valerie Plame, I would guess. And her husband, Joe Wilson, used to be an ambassador, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes,
and so he was pretty upset about the whole thing, too, rightfully so. And then you have this this exodus of rats jumping off of a sinking ship with Libby and then Karl Rove and Porter Goss, the head of the CIA, and just musical chairs over and over, not just there, but also in the Treasury, in the World Bank, the Federal Reserve, and that's a foreign corporation anyway. You know, I just think, you know, they ought to just get rid of them totally. Send them back to where they came from. We know these people aren't Americans. We know these people are conspiring against the country, just like Hitler did against the German people. He wasn't a German and passed himself off as a German. And we have the same thing going on here. There's nothing different about it. So that's my rant for the moment. Go ahead and comment.
One of the things, it's not really a rant for me. It's a dissertation of history. You see, we've become, with television and movies, so disbelieving because they mix docudramas and mockudramas, and you turn around and you watch an entire movie, and then they say this wasn't true, but it was based on characters, and had those characters been living, they would have said these things. Well, that's the way the government acts. That's the way the government behaves, and we've seen this a lot through history. I became a fan of yours because you bring up names, and see, these are names that are not household words to ordinary Americans. These are the super patriot Americans, supposedly, the ones with the Germanic roots, that understand why when we say Otto Skorzeny, when we say his name, we put a piece of history together. And when you put Bush and Prescott Bush all into it, you get a better mix. And when you put all of the Illuminati families and the ones that were present pulling the strings at the time, you can see why presidents like FDR are eliminated and Truman comes in, where you see the Masonic links, and then you see Joseph Kennedy, who is of an Illuminati family, and then grooming his son Joe, and his son Joe was a prime candidate within the Illuminati family. It wasn't supposed to be John. Now, people say, well, what does that mean? It means is that he didn't have the same training or indoctrination that his older brother had, and so what happens is he wants to go up against and he wants to right the wrongs and everything. But he married a woman who understands how the game is played. It's played so well, Don. It's played so well that she ends up marrying her husband's murderer, you see. And they rejoice because we don't put two and two together. And how I put two and two together is not through all that's been read or written on the Internet, because the kind of research that I do, you don't find on the internet. If you go and you look, you will not see Maria Callas being hooked up with Aristotle Onassis and then putting them both in the same place in history at the time of the assassination, and then see it cross-referenced in Maria Callas's biography and William Manchester's Death of a President, to where when in 67 it was getting ready to be published, Jackie didn't want that book published. The family didn't want that book published, because when you read page 555, you really understand what an Irish wake is, and that nobody was sad that John was gone. Bobby knew he messed up, that he had to make amends so that he could run. He understood who took his brother out the day he picked up the phone from J. Edgar Hoover telling him so, because he couldn't wait for anybody else to tell him. J. Edgar Hoover had to deliver the news. And he took it in quiet resignation. And that entire weekend, while everybody else was crying their eyes out, not one tear fell out of Jacqueline's eyes. And I understand the look in her face was one of fear of being found out. She was in on it. And when you begin to really, really look at it, you can see how much pie in the sky we have been believing, and how much homework, and the true story that needs to be told. And that's why he had a heart attack. He was already had the cover because he was overweight. I'm talking about this meet the press kind of guy. You couldn't have him meeting these political candidates. You couldn't have him squaring off with McCain. You could not, with all the doubts he had in his mind. As they say in that movie, what is it, the one where the guy gets busted for all the drugs strapped to him, and he ends up being a congressman, he's from New Jersey or New York. Anyhow, Bad Machine, as he's walking around the pillar, Midnight Express, and he's walking in the opposite direction. And the thing that they say to him, and everybody's fearing for him, because he's walking in the opposite direction. You see, this is how I see myself in this world. I see myself walking in the opposite direction. And now in 2008, I'm starting to see more people walking in the direction I have been walking. And it is so refreshing when you're not called a conspiracy theorist anymore, because you're taking it from the FBI records. You're hooking up and connecting people in history and saying, well, then you got to call this person a bold-faced liar, that they weren't in that space at that particular time and they didn't say that, because this person says they said it and this person says they say it. And this is the way the researcher has to go. They can't go to the internet and believe. I'm right now sitting. I can tell you something. I've got Maria Callas's biography in front of me. William Manchester's opened up to a particular page. I've got expose on the hometown I come from. I've got a description of Aristotle Onassis in her biography, coming back to her. So happy. He was a megalomaniac. I've got a history book that stops at 1938. Why did they need to lie? They're indoctrinating. I've got Robert Novak's whole thing on Lyndon B. Johnson in it. That is a treat. I've got Ron L. Hubbard's Dianetics book, his original one written in 1951, it talks about him being present when they smashed the atom and when they, you know, created the bomb, and how we could have gone in another direction. It's all about these books, and I encourage, and that's where my research comes from, to where I can quietly sit and do and know who's pulling the strings, who the Illuminati families are. I can quietly know why gold is the price it is and oil is the price it is. They're playing the game, but that's in their kingdom. You see?
Yes, exactly. Yeah, that's what was coming to my mind as you were speaking, is that you're recalling all these historical moments in our lifetimes, at least yours and mine.
Yes.
I'm not going to ask you how old you are. But
I'm 56 years old, and I'm proud of it.
Well, me too. So there we go.
You're a dragon?
I'm not proud of it, though. But
are you a dragon?
I'm 56.
So you're a dragon. So, yes. You know, there's never been a dragon president. There's never been a president with an astrological sign, Chinese astrological sign of dragon. Isn't that interesting?
Well, actually, I was born in the year of the rabbit. So,
oh.
Whatever that means.
Okay. Hop to it.
I can run. Yeah.
And they can be vicious, too.
what came to mind when you mentioned Kennedy, it's well known amongst certain researchers that Jackie was already on Aristotle's ship while they were still married, and Kennedy was very distressed about that, JFK, and he ordered her off of his ship, and who did she marry? Who did she end up marrying? His biggest enemy, or one of his biggest enemies, anyway. I mean, he had a lot of enemies because he was intent on getting rid of the Federal Reserve and the IRS and going back to the gold standard. Money had already been printed, and his most trusted agent, Jesus Angleton, Jesus, I believe, is his middle name. Anyway, Angleton, we'll call him, ended up probably being the one orchestrating the whole thing between all the various agencies and agents that carried this thing, to its conclusion. And even Otto Skorzeny comes in the picture there, said he was there right behind Bush, who seems to be the only person who didn't shed a tear and still can't remember where he was on that day. Although we have pictures of him in front of the Texas School Book Depository. Lied. In other words, I'll just lie, and even if you don't believe me, I don't care, because I'm just going to go on lying again.
Yeah.
What does it take?
People ask me sometimes, why even bother? Because I'm saying that if they can in 1963 take out the president, with no abandon, and 2 days later be in the White House celebrating the event, because that's what, in a sense, James Garrison was saying. And I read the book Trail of Assassin before they made it into a movie, and I already knew half the stuff that he was investigating in terms of it was the stuff that I'm still looking at as to why there was a Watergate, why there was an Iran-Contra, why today Michael Reagan, an agent provocateur, who is... who did a lot of undercover work for his father when he was in the entertainment industry and dancing, ballet and all of that, that he worked with his father on a lot of the projects. And so when I look at all of these people, and some of them still alive today, like Jacqueline Kennedy's sister, Lee, she's one that could testify to the mood and what was going on and how everyone felt about the Kennedys and her family and how they were responsible for her father's demise in the stock market because he was just a corrupt man. You see, these are the Illuminati families that ordinary Americans don't really understand, and these are the they that we are talking about. The problem is they don't care. If we know, that's how psycho used to be, that they didn't want to be in the news, they didn't want to be traced, but now they're getting sloppy. They don't know how to compete against this technology, so it's more of a idea to drive us crazy with the truth, you see.
Yeah.
So that they can get away with it in front of our eyes, and I believe this is the way pedophiles behave, you see.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the way our government behaves, because it's being led by a bunch of perverted, pedophilic, pederasty, all the nasty words we never want to talk about because they should not exist in God's world, is right in our face, and they're saying, ha, 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 now what you going to do about it?
Mm-hmm. Well, what they're saying, and you pointed out something, this is God's world, but they prefer to call it Satan's world, you see.
Because there's two sides to everything.
Yes, exactly. So, in terms of where things are now, you also have Illuminati wannabes. In other words, some of the Illuminati families just they were devious, and at the same time, they were above board. They wrote up books or manuals as to how things were going to be run, and just passed them out and said, these are the rules. This is how things are going to go. Now you got guys ad libbing the corruption almost moment to moment. And they're using the computers. They're using software with backdoors into every country and every bank's information. People are not aware of this. They think everything is, they read the stock reports. They read the Dow Jones or the NASDAQ results of the day, and they think that because they've read this stuff, they have a good understanding of what's really going on in the world. And you look at 9/11 or WorldCom. Remember WorldCom. Remember the Lincoln Savings and Loan scandal, where billions and billions of dollars were lost. And that was Bush's son, Neil, behind that. And what happened? What happened with that? Who ended up paying all those billions of dollars that disappeared? Who ended up? What about the Madison Loan and Guarantee in Little Rock, Arkansas? What about that? That money that was being used to fund political campaigns from a bank, not to mention bribes and to launder drug money coming into MENA, Arkansas. What about all the people who knew about that being killed?
Yeah.
When are people going to stop and say, enough is enough is enough? It's mind-boggling to me.
Well, what it is that people feel helpless. And the only way you feel helpless is by not having any faith or being ignorant or unaware, because mm-hmm. we all are aware that people in our society are getting away with murder. We know this. You can look at things like, and it serves a purpose, because what happens is when you have a world that's disillusioned, forget the fact that we believe in God. Just even act like there was no God. When you're living a world where you stand there and you see the man with the gun in his hand, standing over the dead body, and he's telling you, "I didn't kill him." There's this thing in America where we have, that's plausible, I see. And self-deception will have that person, after saying it, "I didn't kill him, I didn't kill him, I didn't kill him," and he says it enough times, self-deception could be so strong that it can pass polygraph tests. That these people actually can pass polygraph tests and be guilty of murder. The kind of studies that they have done, and it all goes back to Nazi Germany. Give you an example, because that's the period of time that we really love, because World War II ended, and they started World War III as soon as the armistice was signed. They brought all these people, and we get to Project Paperclip. What we start to get is an idea of what their areas of expertise were that they wanted from these people, and part of that was the medical experiment. I mean, we let the Japanese go. I mean, they were injecting horse blood into our GIs, and we had a State Department that said, "That's an interesting thing to do to somebody. I wonder what happens when you do that." They would drive people out of their skin just so that they could then, take this and see if this stops it from hurting. When you look at pharmaceutical companies and how many of them are German-backed, Austrian-based places, and how they have experimented on all these people and have been here in America and are driving us all crazy. That's why I became a reverend. I became a reverend because I wanted to help the casualties, because as a victim of COINTEL, and I was a victim of COINTEL at an early age, in my senior high school year, where truth was turned around and wasn't, and I was in jail at the same time that Angela Davis was being lied on and the whole Attica and Rahway thing. So my history about what my government will do, what my federal government will do in collusion with the local police department all the way up, and watching this for the past, just 35, 40 years, and seeing how good they've gotten to where the point where they can bring down a building in front of my citizens and say, it was jet fuel. But I remember my first reaction to the 911, and I'm out here in the jungle, and my neighbor comes running out of her house. We don't have internet. We don't have telephone. Well, we have telephone, yes, excuse me. We had telephone, but we had no television, and we didn't know what was going on. And she said, a plane just flew in to the World Trade Center. And I'm like, they're at it again. And immediately I thought about Enron. Immediately I thought about all the investigations that were coming up. Immediately I thought about Bandar Bush. Immediately I started thinking about all the things that we had been studying and saying, I stood in the shadow of those when I was 17 years old. I watched them be built. The peace movement and the hard hats all having, there's a history there on that property. There's an energy there. And when they blew up those buildings, they were telling us, you're next, you see.
Yeah, well, you know, there's a very simple scientific argument behind their ruse that jet fuel brought down these buildings that had 47 steel beams embedded in concrete supporting those structures, both of them. And that is the fact that, and they say that it, the fire was that hot. If kerosene could burn that hot, you couldn't use it as a fuel in an aluminum jet or airplane. It would be impossible. The jet would melt in the sky.
Well, yeah. See, we're arguing science, you see. It's kind of like back in 63 when they were looking at, and 64 when the Warren Commission came up with the bullet explanation of the magic bullet defying all. We had to eat it. Now, as we got more and more sophisticated, 2-3 years later, more commissions, more doubt, more people coming at it. Next thing you know, we've got an investigation on it. It was 1978 that we actually have the House Senate Assassinations Committee come together. Why? Because too many people were dying. Why? Because CIA was killing folks in other countries, and this is not what the CIA was supposed to do. It was founded to collect data and then gather intelligence, not to go out and kill people, maim people, create splinter organizations and fund both sides and watch the war start and back up and be a corporate pawn. And now the CIA isn't even the head of anything anymore. We really are now seeing that it is the NSC and the DIA, and they're even more treacherous than the CIA. That's just the family business. And when we get a president who wants to splinter it again, I mean, you know, say Obama comes in and gets to be president and says, just like Kennedy, after about 1,000 days, there's a secret government or something behind my back and it ain't working and I want to get rid of it so that we can do something different. And he was dead after that, you see. Because
well, we've got four KGB agents working in the CIA right here in this country.
Well, you've got CIA, you've got German Nazi intelligence advising this here young president who we have now in Kissinger. I mean, the way he even got to power and power. And then it will be handed over to Brzezinski, which is fueling Obama's foreign policies. You see what I'm saying? So we're trapped, and it isn't until we do something to identify these people chapter and verse to where you can't look at them without seeing Nazi, without seeing fascist, you see. And people say, well, that's terrible. But I'm saying this game is going to be over soon, you see.
Mm-hmm.
The domination for right now, here's an example. Right now, our federal government is slapping China in the face, Africa in the face, but China mostly. And we owe so much money to China that we couldn't give the president of China a dinner. We only gave him a lunch. You see what I'm saying? The kind of foreign policy that's being played now is nanny, nanny, poo-poo. That's not going to hold up underneath the scrutiny of the press anymore. I think the press is getting ready to have their muzzles taken off. There's something that's getting ready to happen to create chaos.
Well, the bottom line to all of this, you're saying, and you were describing, you know, after the war, they let Japan go, they let Germany go.
They let all the Nazis out. I mean, as if they had done nothing wrong, and put them to work in the aerospace industry. Put them to work in the executive offices. Put them in our intelligence community. Sent them over and started the German intelligence community. Then sent them over to Russia and then sent them here and there. We see Helmer Schrott and Arto Skrzynski. Before they came over to the United States, they was over in the Middle East setting things up. You see Aristotle Onassis in 1954 in the Jeddah Agreement. And I'm not reading this. It's just coming off the top of my head. And how calls were made, and Bob Mayhew, and you see the Hughes Organization, and you start to look at it all, and you start to say, oh, my gosh, this is what's controlling the political parties today. And now the man at the top funds both. He don't care if it's a Republican or a Democrat. He's ready to rumble.
That's the whole point I was about to make. It's about follow the money. You see, we start looking at this drama that's being played out. It's scripted.
And
who's making money on every participant? It's the Rockefellers and the Rothschilds and the Bronfmans and on and on. And you know, there's some names in history that aren't really mentioned a whole lot.
Freeman.
Payser, for example, was the big money man in the United States and owned most of the railroads. A lot of this is tied to the railroads. Look at the railroads today.
Biggest landholders in the state. We gave them all our lands.
Yes.
We gave them all our lands. The United States government gave them those lands in the people's name, thinking that if they didn't maintain them, they'd come back to us. But instead, they became malls and they became roads, and we never got any of that back.
And they connected the railroads between land with the shipping companies.
Exactly.
Boy, when I do my research and I come up with a passenger liner that for 20 years is a passenger liner, and then all of a sudden it's being used, it's been taken over by the Navy. It's like, well, this is our ship now. We're going to use this. And then they turn it back over to another country, give it to them. You don't actually think there's an exchange of money going down. And if there is, it goes into somebody's pocket, and then the ship is scrapped a year or two later. It's a recurring theme that you find out when you're following the people, you can follow the money. And you can see literally how they're building these empires under the ruse of, we can't get along with this country, they're ready to attack us. I mean, this whole situation going on now is nothing but smoke and mirrors illusion.
Yeah, but we still see these people. We still see these people. When you see them in the body of Maria Shriver, when you see them in the body of the little girl Carolyn that's now all grown up and married. If these people don't care who killed their relatives, why should we, huh, Don? Why should we? But see, we know why we have to care, because this is wrong, you see. And until America stands up and says, this is wrong, this American history has to be written again, that Oswald didn't shoot anybody, that was Johnson in being controlled by the Illuminati, who created their own Murders Incorporated after they took care of Capone, and they grabbed the mafia. You see, that's what was happening during the Kennedy time, you see. Bobby was starting to really give Jimmy Hoffa and all those guys fits. And they had, he was on the I don't know if you ever ran into the Appalachian conference where they went the barbecue and all those organized crime syndicate people were having said they were going to have the barbecue, and they busted that all up. At that time, they were announcing that Aristotle Onassis had taken over the mafia and was running, because he had Hughes in his hands. He kidnapped Hughes, and when he did that, he grabbed the government, he grabbed the gun, which is the Pentagon, he grabbed the girl, which was the First Lady. You see, it's a thriller. It's a story. He even said, it's espionage.
Mm-hmm.
So I have appreciation for a great story, but I want it written in truth. And until we stop believing in the magic bullet theory, you know, Arlen Specter, he's still alive, you see. And no one questions him as to how he came up with this here magic bullet theory, you see.
Well, that was, you know, every time there has been a crime, a major crime committed, And these people are responsible. These politicians are behind it. They set up a commission. That's how they get out of going to court and stand in trial, where evidence can be presented and where they can be found guilty and sentenced and hung or electrocuted or injected, or back then they had the gas chamber.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how they handle it in Washington, but they don't really care, because their intention is not to get caught, because they can bribe everybody or kill off those that are going to speak the truth against them. This is the reality that so many people are in denial about, but it's you know, they're tightening the clamp. They're tightening the vise, and eventually when people aren't eating, I mean, it's bad enough right now they're not working. When they're not eating, when they can't feed their families, when they have to deal with people breaking into their private property to steal something so that they can try to get something to eat, that's when the reality is going to sink in. It's going to be something as simple as, where do I get my next meal or my next drink of water?
Well, we've already had, we are having that happen now, and I truly believe that all the drugs that the government has made available to the citizenry, and all the crime and the guns and all of that has been put into the hands of the desperados out there, we have a bubbling pot of call and clamor for law and order. You see, this is what they want. And they are not against, like, when you look in history, I lived in L.A. as an adult, so I am very aware of the kind of skullduggery that the LAPD is able to commit against the citizenry in their own neighborhoods. And so what is happening now is, with the Homeland Defense, we can't tell where military and law enforcement and all meet. They're all meeting together, and they all have agreed that we're the enemy, and that when we don't do as we're told, you have permission to put us in our place. Now, Don, what we've been fighting all this time and what people have closed their eyes to is fascism. You see?
Mm-hmm.
And they don't understand it. They don't really understand it, because, see, fascism is nothing like communism. Communism says, hey, go after those people. You know? It's an international thing. But fascism doesn't mind capitalism. In fact, Mussolini called it corporatism. And between the time that JFK was assassinated and now has been the fertile ground for fascism to grow, and so much so that in California, which was the first para-fascist military state way early on, like in 68, you see what I'm saying, now has an Austrian-Hungary, Austrian governor whose father probably was in the SSS, and he was probably in the Hitler youth, you know, working it and jerking it for the Republican Party, knowing he can never be president, but he could be governor. So he holds down California, and other people are holding down all these other states, and what we have, folks, is the appearance of a democracy. But what we have is a full-fledged fascist state that allows us an election every 4 years, because that's just how fascists are. They want us to like them, you see. They want us to cheer them, because this is how they can deceive us and deceive themselves that they're doing the right thing and that they are working and that they have our mandate. And it isn't until we stop cheering these people, no matter who they are, and sit in silent contemplation about who they are, and stop going gaga go-go over everybody, and stop jumping up and down, we might be able to see some clarity and be able to see what we need, because right now, America is in debt. It's no longer a creditor nation, and I feel sorry for it. It has my deepest sympathy, and I'm an American. But I'm also one of God's children, and when I see what it is, I have divorced myself from this nationalism and have gone into the spiritual side of things so that I can be just like Jesus, who said, hey, you know, you can't be divided. I'm just paraphrasing, but you can't be divided against yourself. You cannot have two masters. You have got to come through the Father. And I say, yeah, and every time I come through the Father, I come out all right. When I come through Clinton or I come through Bush, I just see so much pain. I just see so much nonsense and lying and cheating. So, you know, what can I say? I love you, John.
I was going to comment on something you said, actually.
What's that?
There's a thing going on, we look at joining sides together, okay? First of all, the people on this planet have to recognize our oneness with God and with each other. This is not a political issue. It's not even a religious issue. It's just a statement of fact. And if you can look at religion, the most profound, truthful aspects of any religion, or science, or politics, or any aspect of humanity getting along with itself, you can't be going down this destructive path and proclaim that we need unity. The first thing that we have to do is allow or tolerate our differences. And I'm talking about the people. Forget about the governments, because they're playing their own game. But I'm talking about the people recognizing that it's not a matter of what color skin you have. That's what they keep pushing on us. They're doing this in this election right now. There's a reason why they do that, and that's to pit various sides against each other. They have Obama running not because they want a black man in the presidency. I can tell you, I'm 99.9% certain he's not even American. I can tell you that. And all you have to do is do the genealogical research that I've done, and I can tell you that. So here we are again having a stooge. A non-American again being inserted into the office. Now, you could say, well, that's a stretch. That's just hard to believe, you know. And you have these folk stories that they've created. They've made his mother into a myth, and we haven't been told the truth about his mother, I can tell you, on every turn, nor on his grandparents, and I'm talking about on his mother's side of the family. And then you go to the African side of the family, and there are many, many anomalies on that side. Why is it that none of these people running for political office, the highest office in the land, cannot show valid documentation as to when and where they were born and who they're related to? Why is there nothing but a trail of dead bodies, missing people, missing dates, missing birthplaces? And when they die, it's a cremation. No one can do any DNA testing on their body to show who they were.
Answer that? I want to give you something to chew on there for a minute. When I look at Obama's situation with his mother, I think I was in the mental health field for almost 15 years before I started driving a cab and said, I give up, I got to find out why everybody's so crazy. Because I truly had a wonderful childhood, and until I stepped out into the real world, I realized that not everybody plays fair. Mothers, especially mothers who have affairs, who come from the Southwest, so to speak, or the Midwest, I don't know what they consider Kansas to be, when she comes to Hawaii and she's here all starstruck and she may not want to be like her family and she goes out with men of color. We know this is her M.O. Now, if she got here, it may be possible that who he thinks his daddy is ain't his daddy, you see. Many women lie to their children about who it's called. Parental uncertainty or paternal uncertainty, what we have here in all cases of all candidates and what we can say through our research is that there's a lot of paternal uncertainty, and that's why you have the holes. Who his father is may be some scruffy black man who might have just been a barber, because he sure has a lot of style and whatever, you know, and that he knows that that's his because he know the woman now he see. So you got some black man over in Hawaii or in San Francisco somewhere who may be his daddy. And it ain't linked to no Kenyan. It's very important for him to be an African American, you see. now,
well,
to me,
now that part of that, part of what you're saying is the story. Do you understand what I'm getting at? That's the story as it's been told to us.
That his father comes from Africa.
That his father, the so-called Barack Obama Sr., is his father, and Stanley Ann Dunham is his mother. Now, that's the story. And you're because they say he was born in Hawaii, that makes him American automatically, because they say that. But do we have definitive proof? There seems to not be a way to verify where and when he was born, despite the fact that that's the story they publish. You see, I'm not talking about.
So, have you done any research? Have you done any research as to her stay in the University of Hawaii? Have you found her college records? Have you? Have we gone that far?
I've gone in down the rabbit hole so far that the stuff I'm coming out with will absolutely blow your mind.
Okay. Because have we gotten any university stuff from Manoa?
Well, that's difficult to get, but I don't even need to even go there, because that's part of the story too. You see, the thing about she's an anthropologist. How many anthropologists go into banking industry handing out microloans to underprivileged women all around the world? Where does she get the acumen through an anthropology degree, writing her doctorate thesis on blacksmithing in Indonesia? 1,000 pages, I heard, 1,057 pages, 800 pages. They can't even get the story right. They can't get the story straight.
Okay.
So if I look at the stories that are out there and just compare the stories don't agree with each other, there is a problem.
Yeah.
Okay? You hear things about Obama's father dying of a car accident. Okay? Let's say that that's true. Why don't you hear about the fact that 1 year before he died in a car accident, 1 year before, he lost both of his legs in another car accident? Now, was that an accident or was that a bombing? Were they removing him from the scene? Were they getting rid of him because they had to move the plan forward? You see, was he even the father?
That's the question. Yes, that's the question. Where you go to, because it's irrelevant, really, because we're dealing with this woman who has had multiple relationships and children from three different relationships.
This is all obfuscation. And he was married to three women simultaneously, never really got a divorce from any one of them. And did he really marry Stanley Ann Dunham? You see? Why was it that a waitress could become vice president of a bank? And that the guy that was in the military at Fort Leavenworth, which was the center for military intelligence back in those days, Fort Leavenworth, that was the background. He enters the Army after Pearl Harbor. When after Pearl Harbor? But that could have been in 1970.
Right.
but they make it sound as if that was the case. I'm speaking about the grandfather, okay? He becomes, his claim to fame is he's a furniture salesman. There's no reference to the fact that he was in the Army, that he was a sergeant. Now, they claim that he was in Europe during this time. I find that rather interesting. Well, yes, the theater of the war was in Europe. But do we know that that was actually what he was doing, or was this whole thing being set up? You see? Because the timing is such that you take somebody and put them on an island, which they did when they sent her to Mercer Island to go to school, and she graduates from school, and everybody knows she's an atheist, and everybody knows that they're going to the communist church, the red church on the corner, whatever it was called, and that Mercer Island was, that school was very unusual. That was not a normal high school. Okay, so when they sent them to Hawaii, they sent them to a faraway place where they could be hidden from the number of people that they would have been in contact with on the mainland. And they put their plan into action. What happens? She's not even finished with her first semester in school. She gets knocked up. That had to have occurred at least at November 4th. Or they gave her the baby. The baby came from somewhere else. Now, there's plenty of evidence to show that that might be the case, okay? And the fact, why did both parents desert Barack? Well, the story makes everybody feel in their heart that this young boy had such a tough life, living with a very rich grandmother in a high-rise apartment in Honolulu. Okay, it wasn't that bad, and the retired Army sergeant, who's a furniture salesman that could charm the legs off of a table, according to his wife. Okay, the fact that he enters Occidental University and after 2 years goes to Columbia Law School, then goes to Harvard, and he's working on all these international for these international organizations, these think tanks, and actually spying on Ralph Nader's group. He wasn't interested in that. They had him in there as a spy. And then when you start connecting the dots, Rev, I'm telling you, you start to smell a rat, big time.
Oh, and yeah. I love the puzzle because when I listen to you and then I look at my notes and I put them all together, you lick the plate clean. I am very aware of how we have had problems with all these candidates in terms of who they are, even Hillary. So they've got some kind of little hatching brood type of thing going on, and it's necessary to divest these people of their lineage so that their bloodlines can come through so that they feel good at the top. I like for everybody to check out these words, the King Alfred Plan. Have you ever heard of the King Alfred Plan, Don?
Mm-hmm. Yes, in fact, I was reading about that this past weekend.
Now, see, I smell this type of thing happening, you know, because those of us who are not going to go for it, you know, we're going to stand out like a sore thumb, you see. And those that want to play the game, they'll be eliminated last. But a lot of us are going to be eliminated. And when I look at that coming from the NSC, when I see that then coursing its way all the way down from the top down, all the way down to local police, you know that they've all been given their orders, and if anything should happen, they know what they're going to do. And, you know, they've got some dangerous chemicals, some dangerous things. So I tell everybody out there that you've got to be careful when we begin to group together. We've got to be smart about this. We've got to be able to talk, and it's got to be almost like the way it was when the Christians were talking about Jesus and everything. They had to go to the catacombs, so... You know, somehow or another, we've got to be able to have safe places for people to talk about what they know, and coordinate all this information for the big picture, so that when we're handed the fairy tale, we can tell them, well, now, read this, you know, and have them have their necks stretched out and their eyes bulge out, and mm-hmm. then we'll just have to see what happens. But I know that America's starting to wake up and that they want better. You know what I'm saying? They want better than this. I really think they're going to realize that. Even if they elect Obama, they're going to want better because they're going to see that he's not the answer.
Well, America was founded and inhabited by people searching for a better life. And at least that was the cover story.
Yeah, that's the cover story.
That was very convenient for them to promote that all these years while they snuck people into the country to subvert it.
Well,
okay.
Yeah, the Illuminati. I mean, you can see how that they probably are the ones that were not happy in Europe, and so they see in their way clear. I mean, Spain, all of that, you know, they had the money, you know.
Now you've got, you know, trust me on this. It's mm-hmm. not, it doesn't matter what someone's racial background is to me. That is not the issue. Race is not the issue. But let's be a human being, number one. And if you're going to get into bloodlines and how important their bloodlines are, you got to look at Barack, and you got to look at McCain, and you got to look at Clinton, all of them, or anybody else they bring into the picture as playing some role in their bloodline. And their bloodline always ties into the money. The two go hand in hand. Always.
Yeah.
That is the reality that people have to start waking up to. It's not about who Oprah Winfrey likes. You see, they made sure Oprah was real successful because she's in a position to influence a lot of people. And she doesn't just influence black women, okay? She influences white women just as much. In fact, she probably influences more white women, and I say that because most black women look at her and say, I'm never going to make $65 million a year or whatever it is she makes. That's unrealistic to most black women.
Sure it is, because we know the government ain't going to give us that kind of money, because they don't want us to have that kind of freedom. So they've got their little Oprah, and she runs around in her little world. But and she didn't have to work hard to get where she is, you know what I'm saying? She really didn't have to. They handed it to her. She was she's just a personality. She's a jack of dime. I mean, jack of clubs, as Robert Camp would say. She's an incredible phenomena, but she's not the race. She's just one individual, and who had a lot of money. But look what else was behind Obama. Look at Warren Buffett's behind him. You know?
Well, yeah. Again, follow the money.
Yeah. Yeah.
Why is that? Why? What is so special about him that, that all these people are putting their money there?
He's likable. He's likable. He's a yes man. Even though he looks, he's selling this. He's a yes man. When you look at him, okay, he voted against the Iraq War, but what he says is he's against stupid wars, you say.
Well, if any of these people are so electable, if any of these people are so electable, why do we have vote fraud? Let me ask that question. That's a simple question.
Oh, you know, vote fraud, that goes all the way back to the Elastic Constitution. You know what I'm saying? We had vote fraud from the very first election that we had. That's why they have to keep amending it, and they have to keep having all kinds of, how you say, special commissions to look at the fraud that goes on during election years. There has to be a better way of electing a leader. I don't know what it is yet, but I'm sure we should have a think tank on it someday.
Well, I've come up with some ideas. You know, back, you know, several thousand years ago, if there was ever a thing such as an election, you know, they probably cast a pebble or a marble, something like that. When you're done, you tip the can and you count the marbles. It's simple. There won't be any hanging chads, and there won't be any back doors. It's a simple concept.
I kind of like the one where, even if they're cheating, the guy who comes in first and the guy who comes in second with the most, they have to work together. You know? No party partisan in the White House. You know? We need to avoid ourselves, because actually political parties is not part of the Constitution, you see.
Well, also,
that says that it has to be there has to be every 4 years a party of parties of opposition to elect the president of the United States. So, you know, that might be a first step. What do you think of that?
Well, do you think there? I would counter with: do you really think that there's a difference between being Democrat and Republican?
In terms of how much money you make per year, yes. No, what I'm saying is if you eliminate the political parties, then you've created this meld of humanity within our borders that you can have rise up. See,
well,
the parties
the point,
themselves stop the good people from coming out because they can't compete.
Well, the point I'm making here, Rev, is that the party system, the two-party system, and they only want the two-party system because they want division. They want left and right, and that's how they even refer to it.
Yeah,
they want this illusion that there's a good side. Well, isn't it every 4 years or 8 years we say, man, enough of these Democrats. We're going for the Republicans this time around. And we went through 8 years of corruption, and we're moving into another 8 years of corruption with the same relatives, all the same players, getting the cabinet positions and the ambassadorships and the lobbying positions. You see, it's all about the money. It has nothing to do with what your beliefs are about abortion or health care or education or any of these things. That they never do anything about that anyway, except take it away. We have less health care, although they've all been saying, yeah, we need health care. We have less health care. We have more poisoning of bodies, more murder in the hospitals through infections and experimental procedures that haven't been tested, and through corruption.
Because fascists don't believe in human conservation, Don.
Okay, how can you be a Democrat or a Republican and be a fascist? You have to be one of them, or they're all fascists, right?
They're all fascists. You see, fascism is corporatism. When you look at Nancy Pelosi, when you look at Dianne Feinstein, when you look at these women, you see corporatism. You see their husbands behind them. You look at where their money comes from. When you look at McCain, when you look at Dole, when you look at Gore, when you look at all these people, you see the history go before you. You can see their families and their families' families, and all of them all milled around in the same offices. They all go to dinner with each other. There is no difference. You're absolutely correct.
I rest my case.
Arkansas, he funds both sides of the parties. He just doesn't want anybody tracing it back to him. This is the way Aristotle of Nassus was. They don't care who's president because it really doesn't matter. He takes his orders from the Bilderbergers. He takes his orders from the Trilateral. And here's where it really gets, and I'll wind it up. Basically, the Constitution is what the Supreme Court says it is, and the president for the past, I guess, three presidents has said they do as the CIA tells them to do. You see, they take their information and their intelligence and they do and go from their advisors. They're not operating on their own. So until we change this whole executive office, which is what I'm hoping that if there is a truth in Obama, that part of it will be is that there won't be any inaugural balls. There'll be no swooning over the fact that they won, that he'll raise his hand on January 20th, say, I do. Then he'll go over to his office, roll up his sleeves, and then they'll say, another knock on the door will come, Don, because you know this is how it happens. He'll be sitting in his office, oh, there's a nice carpet, everything, and then he's going to get another knock on the door, and they're going to say, Mr. President, you have to come downstairs. You got to come downstairs to the Situation Room because we have to have another oath of office. You see? And this is how they get them. And as soon as they raise their hand for that second oath, which is in private, in secret, in the Situation Room, you don't really have a president. You see? And it's that oath that they take in the Situation Room that bears down on us more than anything they did on Pennsylvania Avenue. You know, and that's just how I've seen it. That's how I've seen it played out. For the 56 years that I've been on this planet, it has not changed, and I don't see it changing.
Same interests that are driving who goes into office. It was one of the Rothschilds, I think, that said, "I don't care who makes the laws; it's the man that has the money counts." And it doesn't matter, if it's politics or war, the same people are making the money. The same people are pulling the strings.
Now you
nonstop.
See why we have to pray.
Yes.
Now you see why. When it's all said and done, like this whole, almost we're coming up on 1 hour and 10 minutes now at the grace of our technicians, and I know it's got to come to an end because we could talk a hole through a tin pot, but we're not dealing with theory anymore. We're dealing with facts now, folks, and I know that Don Nikoloff and I both can quote you chapter and verse where it comes from and how you can look it up. So we don't deal in theory. We deal in fact. And when everybody else starts doing that, we'll be on the same page. And I can only tell you, Don, it's been a pleasure for me to be a guest on your show, to have an opportunity to take off my so-called Godhead and divinity and deal with myself as a citizen as we kick it here. And I just want to bless you and your show. And
well, thank
tell you.
You
that I've had a ball.
I want to thank you for the background music of the nature
soundtrack. Oh, did you come through? Yeah, those are cookies.
Yeah, the frogs and the crickets sound pretty happy tonight. So
those are all frogs. We don't have crickets here.
Oh, you don't have any crickets? They ate all the crickets, huh?
They ate all the crickets. They eat the cockroaches, the centipedes. They're a really good creature to have around. Except for the fact that at night they're kind of noisy, but I love them. They're like serenading me all the time. I'd get suspicious about the world if I didn't hear them. They're like my canary in a coal mine.
Yes. Well, it's been a pleasure having you on the show. You got to promise to come back again, and we can continue this discussion
You know, I have my own show, Mission Possible. So, you know, all you have to do is, Don, you have a carte blanche, open-air invitation to come and refresh my show because you're just the kind of person I love to talk to because you're not naive. You actually have done your homework, and well, I'm not alone anymore. I can talk to somebody, and they go, yeah, I know what you're talking about, yeah, you know, and that's
yeah.
just the way it is.
I recommend, take a look at the video that Don posted on the BBS site. There's a video of Obama that you've got to see.
Okay.
And it'll tell you a lot about the man's character. It'll tell you where his head is and where his heart is.
Well, I know where he thinks God is, and it ain't in the church he was sitting in all those years. You know?
That's right. But I suggest you take a look at that video. It,
okay.
it was on YouTube, and they pulled it down, but Don posted it again.
Oh, good. Good, good, good. But that's why
okay.
we have BBS. We love them. So, Seth, Michelle, I guess, Don, you do your sign-off, I guess.
Yes, yes. Thanks for being on the show. We'll have you back on again soon.
Thanks.
And to the listening audience, thank you for being with us tonight on Evident Footprints. Our special guest, Reverend Roxy Hampton, the boss, RJ, as she is affectionately called, will be with us again. In the meantime, you can hear her show on BBS Radio, Mission Possible, and also she is a, not every time, but a very frequent co-host on the Inside Hour with Dr. Leonard Horowitz. And you want to catch that show, too, Tuesday nights. So I'm going to wish everyone a night filled with peace, love, and light. Thanks to Marcella and Seth on the sound and Don Newsom for making the show possible. And I wish everyone a good night.
Details of a simple and proven system that quickly puts $5,000 to $10,000 in many students' pockets every week. What's most amazing is that there are almost no computer skills required, and you can start pulling in cash automatically within just a few hours. We are absolutely convinced that our proven system will create massive wealth for virtually anyone, and we'll prove it. Go to bbscashflow.com now and get all the details. That's bbscashflow.com.